Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Stephen Rice, the Transportation Security Administration's Chief Information Officer and Assistant Administrator for the Office of Information Technology. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jason.
In many ways, you've kind of been on the show before, but this is the first time we've actually done a long form. I think I caught up with you after an FCA event a number of months ago, and a lot of the questions that we're going to talk to today kind of were based off that initial interview you and I did, and then also obviously some older priorities from the former TSA CIO who was on the show almost 5 years ago. So we got a lot to catch up on. So let me start right at the beginning. Major initiative back in 2010 when I talked to the former CIO was the move to the cloud, which is something you and I also talked about. Let's just start there. What's the update of moving to the cloud, applications in the cloud today and potentially in the future?
So the cloud implementation strategy is really dependent on our current data center migration strategy. So one of the challenges we had as we stood the agency up is we inherited a lot of IT systems. We also had a lot of systems that were stood up in silos. So they weren't architected in such a way that they took advantage of the efficiencies as well as leveraged the value of the data that we had. So one of the actions that we undertook in fiscal year 14 was do a data center migration. Data center migration for us, we're actually moving 7 centers simultaneously. And you know that's an awful lot of work. And the value that we saw, one, is helping us to modernize, but two, the most telling aspect is being able to rebaseline all of the data holdings that we have, as well as ensure that we're on the latest versions of our software as we move into these new facilities. What that's done in parallel is allowed us to start looking at the cloud as an enabler. For us, it was first and foremost building a cloud strategy. What would the cloud mean for TSA? How could we leverage the cloud? And then what would be an implementation strategy around that capability? As we looked at our business, we are actually in a declining budget. You've heard me speak before, Jason, $65 million reduction over the last 3 years. What that's forced us to do is look at our business a little bit differently. We're not in the process of turning any services off, but our customers are asking for their information in different form factors. They're asking us for the ability to blend data in different formats, and they're asking us to see if there's value in data holdings that they had never seen before. So what we've been able to do is baseline the data as we complete the centers. Most of the, I would say approximately half of the data center migrations will be completed here by the end of the calendar year. We still have a few major systems. Our financial systems and our human capital systems won't be complete with the data center migration until closer towards the end of the fiscal year of 15. So we won't be totally complete. But what it's allowing us to do is saying, when you look at our strategy, what would be the first applications that you would want to move out? One of the major drivers as to the timing of our implementation is the follow-on contract for our existing managed service contract. Our existing managed service contract expires in June of 17. We were looking at what does the business look like from a cost perspective, a requirements perspective from our customers, as well as what are the art of the possible and being able to blend some of our data together. We have 2 major operating systems that exist in TSA. We have a large Microsoft environment. We have a large Oracle environment. We're looking to be able to say, let's shut those environments down so they're no longer owned and operated by the government, but we still have to make sure that those applications are existing, either operating in a format that's more effective than they are today, or in an environment where they're more they're able to be more efficient in the future. And I'll get to that in a second. So we've challenged our engineering team, our application development team, to say, okay, if the contract's expiring in June of 17, you've rebaselined all of your applications based on this data center migration, tell me how you're going to do it. Start sequencing your applications and tell me where you're going to go. We've been exploring the major cloud providers that are out there today. We have developed a cloud strategy. We've developed a cloud implementation plan. We're in the process of now re-architecting the applications as they've moved into the data centers to start hosting them what we would call in a form that is not agnostic to us as to where they operate. So if they operate within a DHS data center in a shared environment, that's great. If they're operating within an Azure cloud, that's great. If they're operating in an Amazon cloud, that's great. But let's put those underpinnings together to go. What the team has done is they've sequenced all of our applications. They've kind of bucketized them. Here's the first and foremost. Here's the easy list of the applications we're going to do. Let's get those out of the way. They've then come back and said, these applications are a little bit more moderate risk to us. Let's take a determination of what the resource load is going to be to kind of move those. And then they've got the list. It's really the stuff that's hard. It's the list that we probably will never move out into a cloud because of either expenditures or associated risk, because there may not be a risk aperture to move into some sort of public cloud for the operations of some very sensitive applications that we have. And those we most likely would be in a hybrid approach. So we would have easier apps, more moderate apps, complex apps out in the cloud, but those really difficult ones we would maintain within a DHS security environment within either data center one or data center two.
All right, ton there to follow up on. So let me go back to the beginning. 7 data center migrations at once. Congratulations on that.
And they're not all the same size. So right. Some of them are very big. Some of them are rather small, but they're all being sequenced together.
The question, though, I guess I was trying to get to as well is, are they all going to a DHS data center? We know that the headquarters DHS has come up with 2 main data centers. Or are you looking at each of those? Okay, what do they do now? Can they be put into, as you said, an Amazon or Microsoft or an IBM or whoever cloud? Or are they all going in one direction?
6 of the 7 are going to the DHS data centers. 1 being our financial systems. Our financial systems are moving into financial center of excellence. It's going out to the Department of Interior out in Denver, Colorado.
So one of the shared service providers.
That is correct.
Oh, excellent.
So of the 7, that's the one that's not moving into a DHS data center environment.
And is the thought process that this is the crawl, walk, run idea, that you have your own, and then they're going to move to DHS and get comfortable in the cloud, and then potentially, depending on, again, the data, the risk, everything else, then you may move stuff to a more commercial cloud?
Over time, yeah. I don't think we're looking at it from a crawl, walk, run perspective. We're just looking at it from a resource loading as well as a risk perspective. As, you know, some of these either internal facing apps or external facing apps, they're rather light. They're not overly complex. So and they're easily platformed, either with minimal input or they're almost cloud ready today, of being able to be moved out. So those are apps that we can move out and allow us to kind of sink our teeth into the complexity. What do those environments look like? What are the risks that or challenges that we may face? What are the opportunities to actually accelerate some enhancements of those applications in the future so that we can kind of sink our teeth into what will be the more challenges as we start looking at the more complex apps?
And let's talk about those apps, because as you said, your engineering team put them in different buckets. Which ones are you looking at? Can you give me an example, for instance, of the apps you're looking to move to the cloud sooner than later? And then is it, again, this DHS data center cloud, so to speak, or is it, again, the public cloud or commercial cloud?
The Fed. It's the commercial cloud available through the FedRAMP certification process.
So really any provider that's already been FedRAMPed?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, I mean, obviously not any, but the ones that you eventually contract with.
That's correct.
And then when you talk about the cloud migration and you developed a strategy, talk a little bit about that strategy and then how are you implementing it?
Well, the first thing was to kind of lay out where we have expertise. We're strong in, you know, we're deep in the Microsoft arena. We're a large Microsoft consumer today. We have a lot of .NET experience. We have a lot of Exchange experience. We have a lot of SharePoint experience. We started looking at that first and foremost. And we said, let's start looking at those applications first. It's less of a lift from us from retooling our staff. We already have on-site Microsoft experience here with some of our support contracts. So as we started breaking up the application, we started looking at the .NET. As we started looking at that, we started getting new requirements that were coming in the mobile arena as well. So we said, hey, we can't just focus just on our Microsoft. We need to be able to focus on our mobile apps. And a lot of the mobile apps the new requirements coming at us are much easier just to build in the cloud immediately. So first and foremost, it's new mobile apps for us and then Microsoft applications running in parallel that are going to be going out first.
Have you already started moving some of those, or is that something that's happening?
We got some small ones that are out there right now. So MyTSA. The application citizen facing for airport wait times, as well as providing citizens access to what is on a prohibited items list so they can make a determination how to pack. That's already cloud-enabled today and already running out there today.
And then going forward from a timing standpoint, because the sooner you can get to the cloud, the idea here is whether it's a cost savings issue or efficiency issue or just a more, you can get more bang for your buck, even if it's the same money. what kind of time frame are you looking at to move more things, again, whether to the commercial cloud or to the DHS data center cloud?
The date that we're driving towards is June of 17. Get as many out there as you can. And that's just because of the conclusion of our existing managed service contract that we have today. We want to make sure that we're not managing in multiple environments. We want to make it as easy of a transition to that next vehicle, whoever the ultimate winner is going to be, as possible, so we can buy down risk to the enterprise.
And that contract, that was the next point I wanted to get to. I know you're still probably in the acquisition strategy phase. Is there anything more you can tell us about the timing? Are there any draft RFPs, any industry days that are coming up?
We've already had one industry day. We've also had a recent announcement out that I believe went out to FedBizOps that talked about the associated timing. I believe that timing said that the award would be second quarter of fiscal year 16, and the team is working diligently to try to hit those dates.
All right, very good. Something to give an eye out for on FBO and other things. I know there's probably a lot of interest in that contract. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can jump into some of the other older priorities. My guest today is Stephen Rice, the TSA Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. My guest today is Stephen Rice, the TSA Chief Information Officer, and I'm your host, Jason Miller. Now, Steve, before break, we talked all about your cloud strategy, how you're implementing it, how you're moving seven different data centers into basically the DHS's data center headquarters. One of the things when we talk about data center consolidation and move to the cloud is the idea of virtualization, and specifically something that could be even something like virtual desktop interface, or it could just be server virtualization. Give me a sense about how you guys are looking at virtualization and how that plays into this data center consolidation effort.
So our virtualization path, Jason, has been at the server level. So as TSA has matured and we've been working within the contracts that have been available to us, which are first and foremost really computing in the DHS data centers, the way the model has evolved is that we were charged by the physical footprint of space that we were. That's just kind of how they broke the consumption down. And so what we did is it forced us, in our case, to try to consolidate as much material in each of the core cabinets as possible. So we were actually condensing our footprint. What that forced us to do is really look at virtualization of our server infrastructure to ensure that could I get more compute in each rack, driving down my ultimate footprint charges to the data center so that I wouldn't have that overhead charge to me. Big push for us is really looking at, and our Microsoft stack is pushing us out to, you know, Hyper-V to push out some of our Wintel workloads, as well as looking in our Oracle stack on how you virtualize those systems as well. I don't believe long-term internal virtualization for our systems can actually get more condensed than it is today. The big leap for us is how do we start taking advantage of jumping out of the data center, going into the commercial cloud. I think we have wrung out the amount of savings through our internal virtualization that we could possibly see. And the way that we're trying to drive that internal to the organization is at some point, I'm still going to have to recapitalize that server infrastructure, the storage infrastructure, or components of my switch and router core internal to the data center. And as our budget's going down, the discretionary spend to do that is just not there. You know, as we've been talking internally with the staff, it's, you know, how do I start looking at the value of our organization as being able to manage the information flow, no matter where that information is actually being processed. As we started laying out the books as the ultimate cost of maintaining this infrastructure, we brought in, you know, supervisors and team leads much lower in the organization so they could see, you know, some of the financial challenges that we were seeing having in the front office. And they started becoming part of the culture of looking at ways to drive down our cost. So moving us from virtualization of our server stack out to the cloud, you know, that saves us some finances, but it doesn't take advantage of how we would say the appetite of our customers for faster access to their information, and as well as getting the information in a form factor that they can make better decisions. So as we started looking at our opportunities to go to the cloud, what it said to us is, what are the opportunities that the cloud presents other than just cost savings? So we started looking at the implementation of development ops as well as continuous delivery. We've been partnering up with USCIS and the department to look at use cases of where where we could learn. USCIS is a leader in the department as to different processes, different tool sets, different organizational structures on how to solve operations in the cloud, as well as how to engage with the customers so that they can do incremental or very small cycle builds in an agile approach to get as much information or functionality into the customer's hands as possible. We sent probably about 25 IT members of my staff over to shadow CIS for about 6 weeks, and then we've brought those back into our organization to kind of incubate about, okay, how can we organize ourselves a little bit differently? How can we educate our team? How can we start setting up our contract structures in such a way that we can take advantage of agile development approaches as well as approaches of development ops, so we can bring our engineering staff together with our application staff so we can have almost what I like to say, an approach to go to continuous delivery. That is the challenge that we're going to be wrestling with through the remainder of fiscal 16. I think there's a couple of concepts that are in place, and then there are some challenges as to how do we engage with our customers so that they understand the art of the possible of developing a lot faster than what they have gotten used to with some of the traditional methodologies that we've used in the past. So first and foremost, it's educate our internal staff, bring our customers to bear, and then really allow them to go out there and get the work done.
Interesting. Now, there's a lot there, so let me back up for a sec, because I know you said you've wrung out the savings as much as you think you can. That's, you know, both logical and realistic on the virtualization. Do you get a sense of how much those savings are, or how much compute power, you know, where a lot of times you say servers were only at 10% or 15% capacity? Are they?
By the end of this year, I'll be 95% virtualized in my server environment.
From a savings standpoint, obviously, you know savings, hopefully, by the idea that you went from 100 square feet to 50 square feet. Is that type of savings, is what you're seeing it there in other places?
Yes, I'm seeing it at a physical footprint perspective in my reach and the charges that are coming back from the data center, as well as just my the amount of infrastructure that I had to procure to move into this fully virtualized environment from some of the legacy environments that I had been operating in earlier in the year.
And I think that's key, because as you said, with the budget cuts that you guys have seen, $65 million over the last few years, able to reduce that footprint, is able to say, okay, well, we can hopefully move money from this to something that's mission critical. I mean, is that part of that discussion?
Yes. What we've been able to do is it's really moving it, and I think we're going to touch on this a little bit later. It's really looking at fixed infrastructure costs, moving that into your cybersecurity portfolio so that you can make a risk-based determination on how you protect the assets that you have today.
Well, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, so we will put a pin in that, so to speak, and come back to it in a little bit. The other piece of it, I thought this is interesting, the continuous delivery model, the fact that you guys spent time with CIS. Talk a little bit about that experience and how you're moving to this continuous delivery model, because we're seeing so, every CIO I speak with talks about Agile, but it seems like you guys are really taking a major step forward to bring Agile, that concept, into TSA.
Everybody likes to use the term Agile, but what was impressed upon me when I was working and touring through CIS is the way that they physically reorganize themselves, as well as the way they organize themselves in their organizational charts perspective. What they were able to do, and we brought those lessons learned back here, is they embedded the application development team, the application testing team, the security testing team, the security authorization team, as well as the engineering team together as a single teams. And they built a number of these teams and infused competition amongst them. Competition is the ability to complete as many builds as possible, to either meet or exceed their schedule as possible. They gave them freedom of motion as to kind of name their own team so that they had, there's almost an esprit de corps as to culture of each of those teams. They actually had the teams physically sitting side by side. So there were these individual rooms that have Team A, Team B, Team C next to each other. So there was a competitive nature as to the work that was being presented. In addition, we're not talking complex things here, but built a big whiteboard, and they just laid it out. Things that need to start, things that are in motion, things that are finished and got to be put in production. So each moment that you were walking through the area, you saw the list of work that was on the board that needed to be done. And each team had an opportunity to grab the work that needed to be started, They took ownership of that work. They worked it until it was moving into production. And it was almost a visual race as to the work that was moving through those three segments. And we kind of brought that back here to TSA and said, okay, I like those concepts. I like that there's a competitive nature to how that work's being done. We looked at the contract structure and the methodology of how they acquired contract staff to assist them in the development of these development staff positions. And we brought them back to TSA and said, okay, as we look in our organization, what do we have to do? And key, first and foremost, was the physical nature of making sure that our engineering team was with our application development team, physically laying out our organization so we could build teaming rooms, multi-purpose rooms, so that we could have the development team working with the testing team, working with the engineering team, and that the rooms are physically laid out so that you can build them up. If you need more teams, you can get more rooms. You have smaller teams, you can segment those teams down to smaller groupings. And also, something very small, but I think it's very important, allow the team to have an identity. Let them, come up with their own name so that they build their own culture so that as they're successful, people want to be on successful teams. Well, that concept is also the teams are interested now in saying, okay, now let me look at the applications that we need to move, because if they're the ones that are going to work in those environments, they should have an opportunity to discuss, which applications go first. Because, they want to show success. They want to show the value that they have.
I think that's a fascinating change. Now, this is already done, or is this in the middle of being done?
They were about 60% done. The CIS is already working that way.
And are you looking at a similar agile development contract? Because one of the things that when I've talked to Mark Schwartz specifically on the show about this is the idea of continued competition among the vendors that you bring in. Are you looking at a similar contract?
Absolutely.
Again, I'm going to have to ask, because I know a lot of vendors listen to the show. Any timing on that? Is there anything you can tell us about a strategy?
I would predict that'll be hitting the street early part of second quarter fiscal year 16.
All right. So something else to look out for. You're going to have a busy 2016, Steve. Looks like we're going to
be here every year.
Every year, exactly. Well, let's take a quick break. We come back. There's more things to talk about, including innovation at TSA. My guest today is Stephen Rice, the TSA Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Stephen Rice, the Transportation Security Administration's Chief Information Officer. Now, Steve, before break, we're talking a lot about Agile and how you guys are bringing this DevOps culture really to TSA. One thing that you mentioned in there was, not just the development people, but also the security people. And cyber is always on the minds of every CIO I speak with. So talk about the efforts around cybersecurity, and more specifically, how the OMB cyber sprint that happened earlier in the summer really impact TSA and how you're moving out with cybersecurity efforts.
The cyber sprint from OMB was really an awakening to TSA to ensure that there's a greater situational awareness of the value of the assets that we hold, the value of the data, the fact that that data is valuable to others, the fact that that value can become a target, and then the tie to the mission essential functions as the agency undertakes each day, and then its dependency on those mission essential systems that provide that information. It forced some very frank conversations in the organization as to some of the priorities that we have in the IT organization, some of the limitations that we have in some of our tool sets, as well as ownership and understanding of those the value of some of those data holdings. What it stimulated? It stimulated accountability, and not to say that accountability did not exist, but it raised the awareness that we have some very difficult timelines. We have a very challenging mission. We have some very sensitive systems that our mission depends on. And at the end of the day, we have to have assurances that the systems, the access to those systems, the monitoring of those systems are in such a state that we can be seen as a leader within our agency, as well as across the department, as buying down the risk for the security of the homeland.
One of the things that was focused on within the cyber sprint was the idea of two-factor authentication, privileged user access. Is that the area that you would say you made the most progress on? Or obviously, it was also dealing with critical vulnerabilities and also looking at your data assets that are most mission critical. Can you kind of give me a sense of where you think you saw the most progress?
TSA has always had a strong cybersecurity program. We have always understood the location security controls around our mission essential systems, our systems that hold bulk PII, and so those boundaries are well defined and secure. What really was the call or the challenge to us is, how do you buy down the risk of who has access to those systems through either the two-factor authentication with the PIV credential, or what are the tools that are in place to ensure that you're properly monitoring those persons that have privileged access on your systems? So in our model, we outsource a lot of services through integrator contracts. What vehicles, what tools, what processes do you have to ensure that you have proper oversight of those persons that have the privileged access? And then the next part that comes through is, the methodology for security had always been, protected the perimeter, making sure that you're protecting, to make sure that there is no compromise getting through the boundary to get into the network. Well, it's philosophically changing to say, moving from that mindset to a mindset that they're already here. So instead of just, protecting, heavily on the perimeter, is what are the processes that you have internal to make sure that if you see abnormalities in the processes or the compute environment, how do you ensure there are proper triggers and that there are analysts digging down for what you would see as just normal anomalies to ensure that there is nothing malicious in that activity. And then also designing yourself in such a way that you almost create hunt teams, groups of your analysts to make sure you're hunting through your own network to make sure that there are no anomalies out there, as opposed to just waiting for a trigger or sensor to kick off to say that there's something unusual. So it's a fundamental shift in our methodology and our approach on how we look at securing the environment.
How does that relate, that shift, back to, for instance, the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program? I know DHS is one of the first agencies out the gate with some of those tools and services. TSA is part of that because it's again, across all of DHS headquarters. How does the CDM play into that fundamental shift?
They go hand in hand. One cannot go without the other. The ability to do real-time analysis of the security state of your system has to be part of the culture of how your security operations center is looking at monitoring that environment. So they go hand in hand.
And have you guys already started seeing some of those tools get in place? I know that there's always a time lag between the contract award and when things are ready. Where are you guys at with CDM, generally speaking?
We have already put several of our systems under the CDM, continuous monitoring process. I believe we have 18 in place already. I think we're just about to kick off our 19th system already into that CDM, continuous diagnostic process today. So we're well on our way down that road.
And there's also obviously part of that is the agency dashboard. Are you starting to see that dashboard come up and see some of the benefits from those 18, almost 19 systems giving you that real-time data feed?
What it does is it gives me assurance. The previous process was a spot in time. I knew what the security controls were once I had completed the scans and prepared for the authorizing documents. Now I can rest assured that there are processes in place that risk parameter for those 18 systems are understood on a daily basis. So we're buying down risk on a daily basis as opposed to buying down risk through whatever the time was for the authorizing on the older systems that hadn't gone through those processes. So what it is, it allows us to have greater confidence into those security controls than we had under the previous processes.
And I think in the end, that's really the key, having that greater confidence, knowing that systems are safe and secure, that the data is secure whenever you need it to be, which is all the time, not just every 3 years. You talked about risk several times. One of the things I think last time we talked 9 months ago, you guys were looking to establish a chief risk officer. That person plays a key role both when it comes to cyber, but also across all projects. Give me a sense of where you're at with that CRO.
So TSA adopted a new approach back in 2011, adopted an intelligence-driven, risk-based approach to how we function as an organization. In 2014, the Administrator Pistol consolidated risk-based security under a single executive, under a single office. The office is the Office of Risk-Based Security. It is chaired or led by a chief risk officer, which is a new role to the agency. And that person's role, who is Ken Fletcher, his responsibility is to look at risk to ensure that, what we call unwanted outcomes resulting from incidents, events, or occurrence to determine the likelihood and potential consequences of that event taking place. how that has evolved in IT, it's allowing us to have a forum where we meet with a cross-section of the organization to balance cybersecurity investment, cybersecurity risk, operational risk of IT systems against the mission risks that exist, you know, on just our daily baggage operations, checkpoint operations, air marshal operations, so that there's an informed basis of knowledge when you're making the determinations of where you want to make investments, where you want to make operational changes, how those things are to take place. It is a great opportunity in that model to have very strategic discussions as to, you know, how the landscape is changing in my portfolio in the area of cybersecurity, how cybersecurity events, actions need to be considered when making, you know, policy decisions associated with how we operate our business.
In some ways, there's so much risk across the entire agency, any organization. So it makes sense to have this person, let's say, outside of your office. But at the same time, given that IT is really through all parts of an organization, how closely do you work with Ken Fletcher and his office?
Daily. I know it sounds almost a little cavalier, but we are so dependent on the information flow of the systems that we have in the operations of our business that Ken takes into consideration as he looks at different policy challenges and moving forward is how does that evolve from a cybersecurity perspective? How does that evolve just from an operations and maintenance of some of these IT systems so that he can make almost a very neutral risk-based determination that ultimately affects the entire agency. And I got to be honest with you, I like the model. It allows, it also educates me as to policy determinations that are really not really core to my portfolio, but areas that I have to take in consideration when I make risk-based determinations as to staffing levels, tools that I have to involve with size and scope of security contracts and the like to make sure that they are in compliance with or not only in compliance, but also meeting the mission needs of the frontline personnel and the other lines of businesses here at TSA.
And if we talk risk in the way you just described it, we have to move and talk to big data as well, because the data is driving that risk-based decision so much. So give me a sense from your perspective of the CIO's role of how TSA is addressing the big data challenge, tools you're using or you're in most need of.
I think this comes back down to understanding the value of the information that we have. When they stood the agency up, you know, a lot of the systems were siloed. Some of those silos have broken down. I mean, we've been able to tear them down to kind of blend data. But at the end of the day, we are still evolving as to how to blend these data holdings together so that our customers can make a much more informed decision. And one of the challenges I still think we have is educating our teams, just not just the IT teams, but the organization as a whole, as to the value that exists by moving some of these data elements closer together. So we have operated in these silos, and we have come to a rhythm where decisions are made based on the information that is available. I think we almost need to talk about the art of the possible of how some of this data can be blended together to make actually more informed or richer decisions. And you know, we're wrestling with that today.
All right, I think that's a good place to take a quick break. When we come back, we can talk about some of those budget challenges you previewed and maybe even some new priorities if there's any left that we haven't touched upon. My guest today is Stephen Rice, the TSA Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Stephen Rice, the Transportation Security Administration's Chief Information Officer. Now, Steve, before break, we talked about a lot of different things, such as a cybersecurity sprint. We talked about potentially big data, chief risk officer. One of the things you mentioned when we were talking about cyber was the impact on your budget. Now, earlier in the show, we also talked about the budget challenges you guys are having. Again, $65 million reduction over the last 3 years. Talk a little bit about how you're dealing with that budget and how that cyber sprint actually kind of helped you out a little bit.
Well, we talked earlier about the cyber sprint being almost like an awakening. It was an opportunity to kind of look at our business a little bit differently and look at risk long term. So when we start talking about that budget reduction, $65 million over the last 3 years, what we had done is cut around the edges. We hadn't turned any services off, but what that did is took away discretionary spend. And those what it was really is delaying recapitalization. So as we started looking at delays in recapitalization, we looked at it from delays in recapitalization and what that meant from a cybersecurity perspective. And were there portions of the infrastructure that were no longer going to be supported by the manufacturer, that would no longer allow us to patch, no longer be supported, and what was the risk perspective that would create for the organization? We were very successful in working with the CFO and the department CFO in being able to do some reprogramming activities here at TSA that allowed us to acquire enough funding to really kick off 5 new projects that were just awarded at the end of fiscal year 15 that'll start executing starting in January 1st. First and foremost, we're replacing out our entire switching fabric for TSA. So we're replacing all the switches across the agency. Goal there is to have that done by end of calendar year 16. We're replacing all our routing infrastructure. So our routers will be replaced. We're hoping to get that done by June of 16. We're replacing out all of our land mobile radio equipment. So we had an aging infrastructure for our LMR handsets as well as our LMR repeaters. We're replacing all of the LMR infrastructure across the enterprise. Goal is to have that done by end of calendar year 16. We're still looking at the deployment strategies of whether we can hit that date or not, but that's the goal that we're working towards. From a cybersecurity perspective, we looked at our aging compute environment for the desktops, laptops. We're presently running Windows 7. That has, you know, it has its own challenges, but we said, you know, we need to be running the latest version of the operating system that allows us to buy down security risk, as well as that a lot of our equipment was coming towards its end of the warranty period. So we're going to be replacing all of our laptops, desktops. We'll be replacing all our training computers, all the laptops for TSA users, and introducing a lot of tablet computing across the enterprise as well. Goal there is to be running Windows 10, Microsoft Office 2016, starting to roll that out in January, having the enterprise done by December of 16 as well. And then finally, we have an aging infrastructure for our printing environment. So we're replacing all our network printers across metropolitan Washington area. Goal is to have that done by the June-July timeframe as well. But that kind of opens up another line of business as well, is to kind of look at, you know, what are your printing costs associated with each office, each user, and then are there methodologies to drive that cost down across the organization just to find efficiencies in the long term in that area as well. So that it's forcing us to look at an efficiency as well as recapitalization simultaneously in that line of business.
Are you able to tell me roughly how much money you're able to kind of reprogram? Because that's a nice list of initiatives you have out there, and there's a lot there that needs to get done.
Between reprogramming and contract savings that we've had, it was around $62 million.
Wow, so that $65 million hit that you took, that's some good math there. You're able to play that catch-up game, which is so important. People underestimate.
But the challenge that created, that was a one-time fix. So that did not come with tail. So that did not come with long tail. So what that allows me to do is do a one-time recapitalization expenditure to modernize. But, you know, a lot of things have to line up again to fix that problem in the future. The theme that we're talking with the staff about is internal to the organization is that this is a very large environment. We own a very large amount of equipment. That equipment gets old. You have to recapitalize, and the money will not be there in the future. We were very successful this year, but a lot we won't be successful every year in that methodology.
Right, and that's part of the discussion I think we had earlier about moving to the cloud and getting out of potentially owning your own infrastructure and moving to a different model. I mean, is that part of the consideration with the new contract that you're starting to go down that path of a COCO model, you know, a contractor-owned, contractor-operated?
The things that we are replacing are things that really wouldn't go out to the cloud. They're parts of the infrastructure that are going to be maintained even if we're operating the cloud. The switching core, the routing core will still be around. We'll always, you know, in our termination, we'll always have some sort of compute instrument in the hands of a TSA employee, so that we'll own those. You know, our printers, you know, it's not such a large investment that we would ever outsource that. And then LMR, you know, is not something that's going to go out to the cloud. You know, we're cutting around the edges, but in our fixed infrastructure, storage, servers, and the like, those are the things that we're kind of looking out to that cloud model to kind of move away from a GoCo model to potentially a COCO model. Yes.
So, because what I was thinking, just kind of out loud a little bit, is you could, for instance, we've seen this called seat management, outsource your desktop. So it's up to the contractor to keep refreshed and make sure the operating systems are up to date. You could you could outsource your printing infrastructure to have the contractor make sure the printers are working, the drivers are up to date, secured, all that. So that's why I was kind of wondering if you're going down that path as well eventually.
Well, as we've wrestled with that in the past, there's always been the challenge associated with the buyout at the end of those contracts. And some portions of our environment, we believe, will always exist. So we don't believe that it's in our best interest in all cases to, you know, lease those services out. In our case, it's been better for some elements of the infrastructure to remain in a GoCo model where we own the equipment, we lease it out, or we allow the contractor to operate it on our behalf. So those five elements we talked about before, we believe those will stay in that GoCo model. Servers, storage, firewalls, and the like, that those are things that would be part of the consideration that we'd have to delve into to say what that business model looks like in the future, though.
And just to be clear, of those four or five initiatives that you just outlined, the contracts have been awarded for all or most of those?
Yeah, they were all awarded at the end of fiscal 15.
Because of the money, the color of the money, that's a whole different path we can go down. But basically, you had to make sure that money was obligated.
That's correct.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we are out of time. I know we could talk longer. You have a ton going on, a lot of great stuff. So we're going to have you back on the show sooner than 5 years, I promise. My guest today was Stephen Rice, the Transportation Security Administration's Chief Information Officer and Assistant Administrator for the Office of Information Technology. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Steve, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you very much, Jason.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Like Federal News Radio on Facebook for a look at some of the top federal stories each day. Plus, we'll give you a taste of what goes on behind the scenes. Find us at facebook.com/federalnewsradio.